You're listening to Rambling Business, the only international small business and travel podcast with Rick and Brandon,
where we get into your business no matter where it is.
And today we'll be talking about the Christmas Magi and the business of creating a niche. Rambling Business continues our Bethlehem Christmas business series by looking into Christmas past. And by that I don't mean Dickens.
Oh.
Which is the famous, you know, the story of Christmas past.
The hero in that whole thing was the accountant.
Yeah.
What was his name?
Bob Cratchit.
That's right. That's right.
He was Tiny Tim.
Yeah, that's right. He was
the
hero.
Well, he wasn't. Well, no. The Scrooge get the hero's journey.
Oh, okay.
He's redeemed. That's one of the hero's journeys. Anyway, let's stop talking about
accounting.
Accounting and
it's hard to find accounting heroes in movies.
It is. Usually they get eaten by the dinosaur. Oh no, he was a lawyer. Ian Malcolm was a mathematician. That's pretty close if you think about Jurassic Park. But we're not talking about Dickens. We're talking about the original Christmas with the three wise men, or magi, as they're known, and the theory of where they came from and what their business model was that helped propel them into the Christmas story. Of course, stay tuned for our travel tip and tax tales coming up.
The Christmas Magi story developed well after the Gospel of Matthew in the Bible. For example, we don't know if there were only three of them. We don't know if there was 30 of them or one of them. They thought there was three in the lore afterwards because they had gold, frankincense, and myrrh. So they figured they were each carrying something.
But they might have just paid one. They just would have had one guy carry all of those.
That's right, one guy. Yeah. Or 30 people giving the same gift, which is really embarrassing.
Just one-tenth each.
Really embarrassing. You gave frankincense too? So did Harry.
Why did we all shop at that one gas station right before we got to Bethlehem? Yeah, right.
There's no indication that they were kings, all right, even though we have crowns on them all the time.
We three kings.
Right.
Yeah.
I know. We don't know their names. It's like Balshire and Casper and the other guys.
The friendly ghost.
Yeah, right. The friendly ghost. And we don't even know where they came from. I mean, that's the other thing. We just know that they saw a star when they were in the east, even though people think that they saw a star in the east. No, they were in the east and they saw the star looking west.
And that's a big area.
That's right.
Generally, the east.
The east, yeah, it's a big area.
From Jerusalem and Bethlehem.
Yeah. Well, many biblical scholars see the three wise men as just a fictional story. However, it doesn't make sense why Matthew, who was a Jew, would place Gentiles, who were considered dogs back in the days of the Bible, from a Jewish perspective, place them in such an important role in this gospel, which was directed and written to the Jewish people. So it really didn't make sense. So just off the cuff, it didn't make sense why this would be made up later on. Now, I did find this book. Now, maybe you could help me pronounce his name. Dwight.
It's pronounced Dwight. It's a very confusing first name. D.W., it's Dwight.
Longenecker.
Yeah, I don't know that. It sounds like the name of one of those dinosaurs from... What was that thing I watched when I was a kid?
Jurassic Park.
No, not Jurassic Park, the cartoon. Land Before Time.
Oh, yeah, you watched that a lot.
Yeah, we did.
Petrie.
But that Petrie wasn't a long necker. That was a Petrodactyl.
Okay. Anyway, see, I remember these things. I listened to the movies that you watched as a kid.
Yeah, because they were playing in the car while you were driving. You had no choice but to listen.
That's right. Well, anyway, Dwight wrote an interesting book pulling together history and geography as to who the wise men were. What were their identities? The name of his book is The Mystery of the Magi, The Quest to Identify the Wise Men. Now, Longenecker's book has some very impressive endorsement, because the first thing your mom asks is, well, so what? Anybody can write a book.
Yeah.
I said, boy, that hurts.
Yeah, especially. You're living proof.
And she said, and so I started looking through his endorsements, and there was pretty prestigious university professors that actually endorsed him. And so the theory is probably worth mentioning, along with the business twist that we'll throw into this thing. So Longenecker tried to disqualify the whole tradition of the Magi originated in Persia. And if you don't know where Persia is, that's around Iran is, mm-hmm. because Persia had already declined as a major power. So they had no wealth, a king that would want to send somebody to the Israelites. Or I'm sorry, it wouldn't be the Israelites. It would be the Romans and Herod, occupied territory. It would make sense. So instead, he points to a near neighbor southeast of the Dead Sea in the Arabian desert in Petra, the Nabataeans. Now, the Nabataeans, most people don't even know who that is. And I only started studying him more because we went to Petra, and that was really cool. Now, the Nabataean king, Aretas IV, had an incentive to cement an alliance with Herod the Great. Now, Herod the Great, if you don't know the history there, was kind of like a vassal king. He was in charge of this area of Judea.
The Romans would take over an area
and
let the old kings rule, but with some by paying them taxes.
And when the Magi at the court learned who the new heir to the Judean throne was born, he sent them as envoys to Herod's court to pay homage. Now, what happened is that the Magi, or the Nabataeans, knew the biblical, the Jewish history, because there's been a lot of things that Dwight talks about on how there's these cross relationships with the northern Arabian areas there.
Yeah, it's a big trading culture. Everyone would, there were a lot of trade routes with camels, and you would get spices and things from faraway areas.
Right. So their gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh were diplomatic offerings. So the Nabataeans had this Jewish background, and they knew the Old Testament prophecies. If they read Daniel 9, they knew that there was a Messiah that was supposed to be born in Bethlehem about this time. And so they went searching for this Messiah. But who were these Nabataeans, and why were they so powerful? Which is interesting, because most people don't even know the name. They know Petra only because of Indiana Jones.
Mm-hmm, right? Yeah.
And so Judy and I had a front row seat to the Nabataean ingenuity in Petra. They were amazing. They existed between the 6th century BC and the 2nd century AD, but they were really a full throttle about the 1st century BC, about this time. They were really hitting the ground. They were masters in water technology, astronomy, mathematics, and geology. In fact, Cicero believed that the great Greek mathematician Pythagoras.
Yeah.
Did I get that right? I want to say Pythagorean. That's why.
Well, and also you said Cicero, which is, as our Uncle Todd says, is the correct way to say it, but most people know it as Cicero, so in case you're wondering.
I know. And you know what? I said that only because Uncle Todd might be listening to this.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm glad you gave him credit.
Yeah, that's how we learned it. Thank you, Uncle Todd.
That's right. Well, that's because he was from Cal, and I was from UCLA.
Mm-hmm. They all speak Latin there. They still teach in Latin. It's like Hogwarts there.
So they thought that Pythagoras absorbed some of the Nabataean mathematical theories, which actually was developed his. Now, Petra was their capital, and was on a major trade route that led from Damascus to Egypt and to the west to Gaza, which still exists. All these places still exist. Ships from the Indian Ocean docking in Yemen and the Red Sea would pass through Petra and other Nabataean cities on their way to the port to Gaza.
Not the ships themselves, though, right? The goods. They didn't pick the ships up and put them on camels and carry them over.
That's right. That's right. I think I saw a movie of that. People trying to cross the United States, finding the Northwest Passage, carrying the ship, trying to get to the different rivers.
That's true. There will be a Northwest Passage in 100 or so years when the North Pole completely melts.
Oh, that far north. I was thinking of like the Oregon River, the Oregon Trail.
Yeah, they were trying to cut through Canada, but
okay. So Petra, as you saw in Indiana Jones, is naturally guarded. If you saw at the end, he rides on a horse through this small area, very narrow, which is called the Sikh, S-I-Q. And it's only, I measured it, is only about 10 feet wide. And it's pretty long. It's probably about a quarter of a mile long, maybe a half a mile long. And they were able to defended the Nabataeans with only a handful of sharpshooters against a whole army because they'd have to come in.
And maybe a couple spearmen.
Yeah,
that's
right.
The whole thing from the movie 300.
Yes. Oh, yeah, really? Yeah. Okay, you know, I forgot about that. Mm-hmm. In fact, our guide, what he told us was the Romans invaded Petra in 106 AD, and they only gained an advantage by setting siege on Petra by cutting off their water supply. And he made a point to tell me the Nabataeans did not surrender. It was an agreement. It was like a ceasefire. You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, because all these guys are like, they think they're descendants of Nabataeans. So they,
they don't want to have to surrender to the Romans.
That's right. Nobody wants to surrender to the Romans.
Yeah, the Italians aren't known for their military prowess anymore. It'd be embarrassing.
Don't ever tell your
Rome.
Don't ever tell your great grandfather that. He would get very upset with you. He had a statue of Julius Caesar. He thought it was Julius Caesar.
Exactly.
It wasn't Julius Caesar that he had a statue of.
Caesar Romero?
No, or Cicero. Uh-huh. No, it was actually just a centurion. Mm-hmm. You know.
So. Well, yeah, I was saying back then they were a military superpower, right. And that was the end of it.
So one of the things that they did is that when invading people would come in, they had these deep cisterns. Mm-hmm. They were able to cover them up so that you couldn't find them.
Oh,
they became the same level as the entire valley, and the enemies normally couldn't find them. I don't know what the Romans did to lay siege, but they were able to stop the water from flowing in there.
Well,
somehow.
Yeah, the Romans were also good aqua.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. They were. They
it was the Battle of the Plumbers.
Yeah. That's right. I think your grandfather was a plumber would love that one. Yeah. The Battle of the Plumbers.
Battle of the Plumbers.
He's not alive to hear that one. He would have loved it. But it was very interesting. They created wonderful things. Now, if you don't know much about it, it's natural rock and sand that I heard they were able to mix it and make a watertight material.
That's amazing.
Isn't it something back then? And so this will explain the piping that we saw. We saw a piping that was over 2,000 years old.
It was still working?
No, it was in a museum.
Okay.
But you know what? It looked very much like the, actually better than the clay pipes that I used to take out when your grandfather and I used to replace it with cast iron, the waistlines.
Wow.
And it was pretty amazing. Now, if you want to see pictures of these, go to ramblingbusiness.com. And go to this episode and go, you know, there's pictures there. Or you can go to our Rambling Business Facebook page where we also have pictures and videos. We're putting videos back up now after all these episodes. We're getting back to videos because people want to see videos of where we go. Mm-hmm. So I got those too. The other thing they did water-wise, the Nabataeans, is they created dams and were very creative in channeling water. So they would carve at the base of these cliffs of the Sikh as you walk in, these tall cliff sides, and the water would pour down these cliff sides, and it would go into these channels. Your mom called them gutters. I said, that's too good to call them gutters. They're too wonderful to call gutters. Mm-hmm. That's what's bowling. You know, that's where you are always in bowling, in the gutter.
That's why I don't bowl
that's
anymore.
Right. But they were... the water would pour off these cliffs, and they would go into these channels that were carved into the side of the cliff, and they would be pitched, so they all would flow down towards cisterns. It was so amazing. You know, I actually got to put my hand in these things. It's just amazing.
Oh, you got the water dirty.
No, I was washing them. But... The Nabataean technology was so good. The dam was so good that 2 days earlier, before we came, the channeling that they did in the dam caused the flash flood to divert away from the Sikh and down another ravine, saving people from being drowned. It allowed our, as I said in our last episode, our guide to pull 18 people up onto a rock. To get them out from this flash flood. And I thought he said they were airlifted after that.
Wow.
And so it was pretty amazing. Now, because of this technology and location, the Nabataeans created the perfect business model of supply and demand because they were in the middle of the desert. And believe me, this is a desert we're in. Everything you saw on Indiana Jones was right, about, you know, looks like 120 degrees or something out there.
Yeah.
In return for their services, they received things like gold, frankincense, and myrrh, and pearls, and many things that would come from the Far East, because these
just
books...
Just trading them for water that they were storing. Right. It was falling from the sky.
And they would also charge them a fee.
To pass through.
That's right.
To, yeah.
That's what everybody did. I'm reading more and more about that.
Corinth did that.
Yeah. If you're coming through our territory, that's fine, but you know it costs money to have this territory, so you're going to pay.
Mm-hmm.
So they would do that. And so putting a lot of these pieces, we see their science and their wealth made them top candidates of the wise men, but with an excellent business plan of not necessarily supplying a product, but just supplying a way station. That's what I'm looking for. Yeah, it's a way station. Mm-hmm. This is like the Barstow of the Middle East.
Yes.
Right?
I'm sure both people would love that.
And, you know, I'd like to call it the Baker, but they don't have that 60-foot thermometer.
Yeah, that's true.
So, but it's close enough.
Close enough.
Anyway, the Nabataeans were great business people.
This isn't the first time we've done this. We've done stagecoach stops before.
Yeah, yeah.
And so, yeah, being someone who can supply traders and keep them going to let commerce through has been lucrative throughout human history.
Mm-hmm.
You're listening to Rambling Business. We'd like to thank our sponsor, Rick E. Norris and Accountancy Corporation. If you'd like to get the full experience, check out our website for videos, music, pictures, takeaways, and travel tips. www.ramblingbusiness.com.
Now it's time for our tax tales, where we tell you strange and unusual taxes from the past and the present.
Tax tales.
Oh, woo.
And since we're talking about the area of Israel and Palestine, we thought we'd talk about this new tax, which is...
Right.
Yeah. It's, according to the Middle East Monitor, there's a new Israeli Social Security tax rule imposed on Palestinians.
Yeah, they included them in the pool, which is a great thing.
Yes.
They have Social Security.
Yes, now they have Social Security. But the bad thing is... If you are a Palestinian who's killed by Israeli occupation forces, say if you're killed in a protest or something like that, you may not be eligible to receive benefits from the Social Security Corporation, and it limits the benefactors to those who have lost a family member to natural causes or due to work injury. So on one hand, some Palestinians are getting Social Security now, which is great.
Yeah.
But also they put in the law to discourage people from being at protests.
Freedom of speech.
Many are going onto the streets in Hebron and Ramallah on the West Bank to protest this law. And
both places I've been to.
And we'll see what we think. But I don't.
Everything's in flux over there.
Yeah.
It always is.
It's time for a travel tip, where we tell you what fun things you can do around the Bethlehem area.
When you're in Bethlehem, stop by the Herodium, which is to the east. You can actually see the little mountain called the Herodium from a Bethlehem rooftop. I actually have a picture on our site. If you look in the very back, you'll see this little, it looks like those little custards in the ditches. You know, remember the little custard in the ditch? You turn them upside down. They're like
a flan?
Like flan, yeah.
For a second, I thought you said custard in a ditch. And I was like, I've never eaten custard.
Custard in a gutter.
In a gutter.
In a Nabataean gutter. You turn the custard upside down. It has that little flat.
Flat, you know. It's like a mesa.
Right. That's what the Herodium looks like when you look at it from Bethlehem, you know, looking out towards the Dead Sea. So according to Josephus, the famous Jewish historian, Herod built a town on that spot in commemoration of his victory, and to enhance it with wonderful palaces, and he called it Herodium after himself. So make sure you check the hours, since it is probably closed on the Sabbath, since it was run by the Israeli National Parks Authority, which hurt us because the one day that we had to go into Jerusalem, we could not go into the Jewish sect part of Jerusalem, of the old city, into the museums. They're closed.
Yeah.
So we missed that, and it was disappointing.
Now it's time for our takeaways, where we tell you what steps you can take to implement what we've been talking about on the podcast. The first thing to think about is determine the demands of your customers that others have not taken the time to notice.
Yeah, well, you know, that is one of the biggest things that we've learned mm-hmm. from businesses is that the successful business people are the ones that just happen to focus on their customers and see something that the competitors don't see.
Yep.
Number two, position yourself in a location or position that makes your product or service accessible to your target customers, like
being a way station in the middle of the desert.
That's right.
The third thing to think about is pull in all of your skills to meet these demands, even if they seem remotely relevant to your industry. Who thought that, you know, astronomy
and mathematics
and plumbing skills would be very valuable and make something a trade hub?
And last, market yourself through all means available as the expert in meeting these customers' needs. Now, the Nabataeans, of course, got the word out, you know, come down these trails, stop by our place. We're open for business. You know, today we got the internet and word of mouth.
Road signs.
Road signs, that's right.
Nabataean stopover, 30 miles. Now it's time to answer a question for one of our listeners. We have one from Hal here who says, do I really need to keep a set of accounting books during the year, or can I just whip up some when I need to do my taxes?
That sounds so common.
Yep.
Our clients.
And then they get surprised how long it takes and how much money it takes.
Yes, you're right.
Do it at the end.
Hal, there's great benefits to keeping your bookkeeping up to date. First of all, you would know what your sales are.
Yep.
And you'd also be protecting your cash, because if you're not doing bank recs, it's easy for somebody to get into your account without you really not knowing about it till some time later.
Yeah, especially if you know you're doing a lot of charges and they're putting it on a place that you usually go.
Right, right. Also, it'll help you know the products and the locations of where you're selling. So sometimes, let's say you're selling in a metropolitan city like Los Angeles, is that you may be getting higher sales in Beverly Hills as opposed to West Covina. And so you may want to put more of your resources towards Beverly Hills.
Yeah, whether it's advertising in Beverly Hills or maybe pushing more advertising to West Covina so that you can, you know, shore up your market there. Depends on what decision you want to make.
And also we want to know like which products are losing money, because one might be a loss leader and you might be making money on one product but losing on another and you don't know it.
And yeah, having all of your bills monthly can really nail home how much it costs for you to have labor.
Yes, yes.
I mean, it's one thing to, you know, do it all on payroll at the end of the year and to add it all up then. Mm-hmm. But you're just a lot more nimble if you have something month to month. You can figure out what's going on.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, and also it would tell you if your labor is too high, so it's just or too low. Disgruntled employees, right?
Yeah, or just you're not utilizing the people you have in the correct way, and you know you could work more people in one area of your business and less in the other.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really helpful to know what's going on month to month. That way, you don't end up at the end of the year just, oh no, I'm broke.
Yeah.
And I owe a whole bunch of taxes.
Hell yeah. Oh boy.
That's all we have for this week. We're going to finish our Bethlehem Christmas business series next week by talking about the Shepherds of Bethlehem, or the Palestinian-Israeli Bedouins. Check out some of our past podcasts while you're waiting for that. Rambling Business has traveled from Maui to Martha's Vineyard, New Orleans to Vancouver, Canada to Norway, San Francisco to Amsterdam. Our map on ramblingbusiness.com shows our travels. You can click on the pins on the map and drill down and see how many podcasts we have for that area and see what they are. But until then, I'm Brandon.
This is Rick, and thank you for letting us get into your business no matter where it is. Our music and podcast was produced by my son, Devin S. Norris. For all your music, composition, and podcast needs, check out devinsnorris.com.